Audio Drama Production Podcast Episode 32, Learning and Teaching Audio Drama.
The Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast, the podcast that's hosted on the website audiodramaproduction.com. The podcast that's your friend if you're interested in all aspects of producing this wonderful medium. Do we produce a medium, Robert? That's a load of nonsense, isn't it? But the sentiments are surely there.
We produce stuff in the medium of audio.
We don't produce a medium. So if you're a new listener, this is what we do. We make mistakes and then try and correct them as we go.
Well, that's all part of the learning process, isn't it?
That's right. Maybe we should start some sort of podcast where we learn how to talk properly, some sort of grammar podcast, maybe.
The Orators Podcast.
But we digress because we're here, it's another week and another great interview, and this time it's Mr. Richard Hand, the professor himself. He's the author of The Radio Drama Handbook, a book that you've read as well as me, Robert.
Yes, that's right. Down at university, I read this book. It gave me a lot of tips on all aspects, really, of creating radio drama, why to make radio drama, the differences between it and any other medium like visual and so on. And a lot of good references and quotes in there as well, which helped me write a few essays.
So we'll get started with that then, and we'll see you on the other side for some other chat. Limited as it will be this week, because we're in a bit of a hurry. But enjoy the interview.
I'm Richard Hand. I'm Professor of Theatre and Media Drama at the University of South Wales in Cardiff.
Hello, Richard. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
I've just read your book last week. I just finished your book, so I thought it would be timely to get you on the podcast.
Oh, thanks. Did you enjoy it?
I did. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I had some notes that I'd jotted down. And what was the reason behind actually sitting down and writing the book in the first place then?
Well, it emerges out of what we do at the university faculty, actually. For years now, we've taught radio drama sort of cross departments. So we've got people who are specialists in audio production work, and then my area, which is the theatre and drama field. So, you know, we always got on quite well, and then gradually kind of developed some teaching modules across those different departments. So it kind of emerged out of that, and it became so sort of successful and popular with the students that myself and my co-author, Mary Trainer, thought, well, we should perhaps think about writing this as a book at some point. Didn't do much about it, but then we were approached by a publisher saying, oh, we're really interested in the Radio Drama Handbook. And so that really kind of, you know, G'd us along to get it done.
I mean, what really impressed me about it, as well as it being a really, really comprehensive guide, and you've pretty much covered everything in it, was that I've read a lot of books in the past which are very, very focused on the BBC, and I liked the way that this book had a real focus on online producers, not necessarily all professional producers either, and I don't mean that in terms of the quality of the work. I mean that people who aren't making money or maybe just not earning a living through audio drama. What was the reason behind, you know, choosing to focus in this area?
Yeah, I completely agree with you that I think the BBC tends to dominate people's perception of radio. And I think it's important to say how important the BBC is. I think it's a tremendous organisation, the way it never betrayed radio. You know, in a way, if you compare it to the American broadcasters, you know, as soon as television came along in the 50s, they kind of jettisoned a lot of their radio obligations. And, you know, it was a real loss, whereas actually the BBC carried on. And, you know, it's a major producer internationally, but it's not the only thing that's out there. And I think with the Internet, invention of the Internet, we've seen a terrific democratization of audio. And we really wanted to reflect that. Part of the reason is we're really keen for people to produce as much and set things up and get going with it. And occasionally, you know, there's some fantastic things get produced that have a long life. There's also some wonderful one-off experiments and sort of the quirky work out there. But in a way, it's a tremendous time. The fact that anybody, you know, in their bedroom could produce a podcast and get it out there and downloaded by, you know, millions of people, or maybe just dozens. Who cares?
Are we seeing a period, or are we entering a period in the future? You know, like, I mean, television today, probably not many, and I don't know that much about television production, but I guess not a lot of TV producers now have the traditional apprenticeship where they join a TV company and, you know, they go through the ranks. A lot of people, I'm assuming, are being hired on the basis of work that, like you say, they're doing in their bedroom, they're shooting in the field. Are we going to see this new wave of producers maybe in the next 10 years where they're not coming through traditional ranks?
I think you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think we're beginning to see that. I mean, a couple of interesting examples there. I know something like the Wireless Theatre Company based in London, you know, just been sort of steadily producing their work and recently got a couple of BBC commissions, you know, which was amazing. Unthinkable when they set up, I think. But just by their sort of tenacity, you know, they've carried on producing the work and managing to get, you know, Nicholas Parsons or whatever to be involved with one-off things or whatever, you know. And that's been enough to sort of prove their credentials. I think it's also a viable form. I mean, as you know, in the book, we talk about We're Alive in some depth, which finally finished last year. And those guys, Shane Salk and Casey Wayland, you know, were coming from film and theatre backgrounds, but they, you know, made it a kind of calling card. You know, they produced this audio drama as a calling card for industries of film and theatre, which was such sort of stiff competition there, but it was a way of getting themselves noticed.
Yeah, that's something that's come up a lot on the show, and we've been saying to people as well, like, you know, a lot of people want to produce for television, and you can either write scripts and send them out cold, you know, and hope that somebody will notice you, or you could actually produce an audio series and gather a following. And are you most likely then to be noticed by somebody if you come to them and say, you know, we've got 100,000 really dedicated fans, there is an audience for this?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And you know, suddenly that's possible, because you're right, in the old days, it, with wanting to be a radio dramatist, you would have to send off the scripts and you'd get a photocopied rejection letter with your name written in the top, you know. But you're right, I think things are more dynamic. And I think there's such a high level of competition as well. And I think the BBC are trying to deal with that with the iPlayer. And, you know, but there's a lot out there. And talking certainly to my students, you know, they're well into their podcasts and they listen between them. It's an incredible range of things they're listening to.
Yeah, that's the beauty of podcasts nowadays. And you know, linear radio, I can't see it having a huge future now, because you can access all this content, you know, stuff that you really, really want to listen to. It's going to be hard for them to compete with that further down the line.
That's right. And rather like, you know, they talk about people with TV drama sort of box setting, you know, watching something in one go. You know, it's a bit like that with audio. I find some of my students or people I know who, you know, downloading a whole series of something and then devoting a week to listening to the whole thing, you know, and it's quite an interesting way of, people are changing the way they kind of sort of listen to work or engage in their culture, aren't they?
Yeah, gone are the days of rushing home for, you know, a programme starting. You don't have to do that anymore.
Right.
Are we going to see, well, I mean, obviously we will see in the future the change in the landscape of, you know, the audience that listens to radio drama in the BBC. And that will obviously have to affect the type of content that they're producing. You know, things like The Archers and that, does that have a long future, do you think?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, I find it still seems to have a following, and even amongst young people, which I find really interesting, and some of them will remember their, you know, growing up with it because their parents or grandparents listened to it. But it still seems to be quite a kind of institution, doesn't it? So I'm intrigued to see what happens with that.
I suppose for aspiring producers and people who work online, one thing that not many people have managed to do at all yet is to earn any money. It's, you know, it's still up in the air as to what the model is going to be to earn a living. So it's still very attractive to try and work for the BBC, maybe, you know, as an independent or whatever. That's still, you know, that's still a lot of people's end game, isn't it?
You're right, and I think this is a big problem. It's something we signal in the book, isn't it, based on the interviews people speaking to, is how do they make a living out of this? and it becomes a labour of love. And in a weird way, it's very reminiscent of the beginnings of broadcast radio in the 20s, isn't it, where people set up their own stations in their shed and, you know, broadcast. And, you know, but actually it's a sort of hobby, and that's a real shame that it has to be in that status. I mean, I think the challenge is, I mean, you know, some of these, there's terrific radio dramas available out there for 99p or less. And but still, people won't necessarily pay that because they'll say, oh, "I'll listen to this for free instead." You know, and that's a real problem, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, like you say, 99p is enough to put people off. And I know, you know, we've completed our very first series recently, and looking back, you know, I'd rather have the thousands and thousands of people that have heard it than have made, say, you know, £40. You know, I'd rather have the following at this stage, but at the same time, you know, further down the line, the rent has to be paid, so you've got to weigh these things up. And I think, you know, the medium has to arrive sooner or later at some sort of model that we can sustain it and have business models.
Yeah, I completely agree.
We spoke to Fred Greenhalgh at Radio Drama Revival a few months ago, and he wrote a very interesting article proposing a sort of subscription-based model, you know, based on Netflix,
yeah,
and that somebody could pay a monthly fee for and have loads and loads of content. But one of the problems that Fred, you know, mentioned was he was happy to sit down and write the article, but it's going to take somebody to go and create a model like this. And when you're doing that, you're not making audio drama, and we all just want to make audio drama ultimately. It's almost like somebody's going to have to come in from outside of the medium to set something like that up.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's a really interesting parallel with Netflix, isn't it? Because, you know, on the face of it, you know, I was sort of sceptical about that. But, you know, I've got it now. You know, it was a way to see Breaking Bad and things that I'd heard about. And it kind of twists your arm to do it, doesn't it? But you're right. You know, it's going to take quite a major thing with audio. But it's needed. I agree. It's absolutely needed. And as you say, the variety of content, I mean, it could be kind of limitless, couldn't it? I mean, that's one thing I found interesting is some of the kind of, you know, the iPhone apps, like the Run Zombies thing, you know, that one which is a sort of keep fit thing, but it's zombie narratives. So you set up a different story which will determine how far or how fast you've got to run. And I gather that's been extremely successful.
Yeah, I've heard of that app, and I suppose, you know, apps are a sort of way. We've even speculated in the past about things we could do, like interactive audio dramas. It's just, it would have been so much work. But remember, years and years ago, you used to get the books by, I think it was Steve Jackson and Ian Livingston. Where,
oh, yes, yeah, classics.
Yeah, they were great. Fantastic. So it was like, you know, you come into this room, and if you want to do this, go to that page. If you want to do this, go to that page. And like we say, we had a chat about it one night in the pub, but you're talking 1,000 hours of audio probably for one quite short story based on all the variables.
Yeah, that's right. There was one on Spotify, wasn't there? Hertz, I think it was called. I don't know if you came across that.
No.
Yes, it's worth a look, actually, because it does that, you know, whether, you know, you get up in the morning and decide to wear grey or turquoise, and, you know, and it determines the journey. It was quite good. It was quite small scale, and really it was just a promotional thing for a new single. I can't even remember the group, I'm sorry, but at the end, you know, you'd finally hear the song. So I'm not sure how successful it was, but it was an interesting kind of marketing game. But it's very well written, I have to say, Yeah, I can check up about it anyway, but it was interesting.
Just looking back to the book, you know, what was the process of writing that? Because you've covered all aspects of creating radio drama. Presumably you wouldn't consider yourself an expert in all these categories, or maybe I'm being unfair there, maybe you know, are a sound designer and everything as well. So, you know, what's the research and writing process there?
Yeah, you're right. I'm not an expert at all, you know, but I had the sort of passion for it, I guess. Yeah, I think it was pulling things together. I mean, with working with Mary Traynor, I was very fortunate because she's at the university I'm at too. But, you know, she had years as a producer at the BBC. So, you know, that was her background, was, you know, professional industry before she went into academic stuff. With me, you know, I'm a sort of academic, but got interest in the history of radio drama and the sort of theory of it. So I think we just sort of looked and think, right, what would we really like to see in a book ourselves? You know, and pure practice can be good as a kind of guidebook, but we thought, well, we also want to frame it with a sense of history. I think that's important. You know, you want people when they are producing, you know, most wonderful work, but still to have a sense of where it's coming from, you know. And I think that can also stop people reinventing the wheel a bit, you know, if they've got a sense of, you know, what's happened in the past and the achievements of some of those amazing pioneers. Because after all, radio's still, you know, it's comparatively young. It's younger than cinema, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. What was the reception when the book came out, and has it been quite widely distributed?
Yeah, it's been really nice, actually. What was pleasing is some people, kind of practitioners in the industry, you know, really giving it a thumbs up, really appreciating it. But I also know it has been taken up on curricula in colleges and schools, so that's been really pleasing as well. We'll have to wait and see, you know, how it keeps going with it, because I think this is one thing we face, that radio and audio is still such a niche area. And certainly in academic publishing, you know, it's completely overweighed by television studies, film studies, those kinds of things. You know, radio is still sort of neglected in some ways. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see if the book has some impact. Certainly, you know, it seems to me, people do get in touch with me saying they are setting up modules on stuff and wanting to do more radio, because it's such an exciting form for the world we live in now, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm currently at uni. I'm doing my honours degree at the moment. And last year we did a radio drama module, but that was dropped apparently by the university this year. I really enjoyed it, but you know, everyone else in my class was really into film scoring and things like that. So at the end of the year when they do the reviews, I think everyone had said that they hated it. I was the only person that really enjoyed it. So I think they went ahead and actually dropped that module this year, which is a real shame, because, you know, it was enjoyable and the demand is out there for it. It just so happened that, you know, 29 out of 30 people didn't enjoy it that year.
What a shame, yeah. I mean, I think sometimes it's the way it's pitched. I mean, we found that sometimes you talk about radio and some people get a bit turned off by that, whereas you call it audio or something, they're more interested. And it's rather like the We're Alive guys, you know, saying don't call it radio, call it a movie to listen to. And suddenly you get a new wave of people think, wow, this is amazing, you know. But one thing we do, every year we run our radio drama module, because what the university does is run a radio station for a couple of weeks. So it's fully licensed and everything. And this really appeals, certainly to my students, the fact that it will be really broadcast and, you know, publicly available. And for some of them, you know, they're regarding it as, you know, that's real value added to it, isn't it? Because, you know, it's really going out there into the ether.
Yeah, it makes a difference to know that people are listening. Have you had students that have went on to produce shows and series and things like that?
Yeah, we've had a steady flow, actually. It's been really good. A couple ending up at the BBC and others, you know, sort of smaller, more independent work, and others continue to kind of pitch shows and continue writing. But as you mentioned earlier, you know, that's what some of them are doing, is, you know, getting ideas for scripts, but producing them, doing some examples of it, getting it recorded. We've helped guys, some of our old students, coming into the faculty, and we're getting them in the radio drama studio and recording something with them, you know, calling cards, I guess.
There's a lot to be said for actually doing something, because, and it's not, this isn't exclusive to audio drama, but how many people have you heard who are going to do this and they're going to do that? You know, somebody's going to write a book, somebody's going to write a TV series, and very few people actually get stuff done. And I've got a lot of respect for somebody who actually starts something and finishes it. It shows that they are committed and dedicated to creating things.
Yeah, that's right. It's the test of things, isn't it, really?
Do you get a lot of people who sort of ask you for advice on getting into audio drama, either before or after reading the book?
Yeah, it's happened a bit. I mean, and what I tend to do is, as we're saying, you know, try and, if they can produce work, that's fantastic, you know, and just have that kind of tenacity with it. Because, I mean, you know, there's some great series that were projected to be 12 parts and ended up being one, aren't they, you know, because it was just the level of work. but to keep going with things. The other thing is, I think, is to look at opportunities. Something like Chatterbox, you know, they occasionally have competitions. So, you know, and they will read the scripts and everything. And it's to look out for that kind of thing. Wireless Theatre Company as well, you know. And I think it's keeping eyes open for that kind of thing and not just sort of thinking, oh, yes, I'll be one of 11,000 scripts sent to the BBC or whatever, you know. Just look at whatever other things are going on there. I think also people could, you know, think about approaching podcasters, you know, podcasting companies, and just see if there's any leads they could follow up there.
One of the things that we mentioned it on the show a few months ago, we've not really had much feedback on it yet, but we did say, look, if you're a listener to the show and you're in a bit of isolation, you're not really in touch with anyone, we basically said if you just have one interest, whether you just want to write, you just want to produce, you just want to voice act, get in touch with us, tell us who you are and what it is you do. And we wanted to try and link people together. Just, you know, get a wee sort of database and help people to get started, because not everyone wants to do everything as well, do they? Some people just want to produce. They don't want to actually write the scripts and vice versa.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's great. I mean, I'd be really keen for us to, you know, continue the dialogue, Matthew. You know, it'd be really interesting on that. Because what we're doing in March, we'll be producing 5 or 6 live radio dramas. So, you know, it'd be good to keep you in the loop for those.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us a shout, you know, anytime there's anything at all. We're an open book, an open forum, and we rely on people contributing and borrowing the expertise. You know, we're limited expertise ourselves. We're just trying to provide a service. And the wonderful thing about the podcast as well is, from a personal point of view, the amount you could learn just by having an in-depth conversation every week. But when it comes to producing your own show, and this happened to us last month, you've got that much going on in your head, you sit down to produce something and you've become so much a perfectionist, it's impossible to be happy with it.
Yes, that's so right.
I suppose that's just part of the battle.
Yeah, I think what I like, I mean, that's mentioning something like We're Alive Again. I mean, it's an incredibly polished show, isn't it? But there's others out there which are very rough and ready and full of mistakes that hopefully our handbook kind of would tell people to avoid. But sometimes if it's got passion and heart, you know, I don't care, you know, it sweeps you along and there's something in the heart of it. That's great, isn't it?
Yeah, a good story, you know. I mean, you want the all-round production, but a good story can really draw you in. Again, you mentioned We're Alive, and we used to talk about this quite a lot, that they brought a lot of people into audio drama for the first time, including myself. It was really the first modern audio drama that I heard. You automatically assume that there's going to be loads more series just as good as that, and you get a fright when you realise that that's not really the case. There's either, you know, not the production values elsewhere, or, you know, very, very well produced shows don't have the amount of content and the consistency of release that We're Alive did.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is a landmark, isn't it, in that way.
So before we get wrapped up, Richard, anything else in the pipeline that the listener might be interested in?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of my time now is about getting these shows together for March, which, you know, the guys are working very hard on them. There's some wonderful ideas coming up. So that's going to be a lot of my attention. I had a new book published last year on British horror radio, so I'm hoping to do a book launch for that, which will tie in with a little live broadcast. So we're hoping to do a 1940s-style horror show with live music and sound effects. So that'd be great. I'll let you know about that. Perhaps we could hook up and, you know, you could air it too for us or something.
Yeah, that's interesting. So is that about horror radio drama then? Or?
Yes, yeah. It's published with Manchester University Press, and it's from the very beginnings of broadcasting through to podcasting now. So a kind of timeline approach. Obviously, the kind of biggest section is the 1940s, Appointment with Fear and The Man in Black. You know, terrific era, but kind of part of British cultural heritage, really. So that's in the heart of it. But it does go right through to, you know, Mark Gatiss as the new Man in Black now, right through to experimental podcasting work.
So is that book out at the moment, did you say?
It is, yeah. It came out last year, but we're hoping to sort of do a little launch for it soon. So, you know, but I'll keep you posted about that.
Yeah, that'd be great. We'll certainly we'll get the links up on the show notes as well.
Because that's one thing I've always done. I mean, this is worth saying, even though I've sort of academic background and everything, for me, practice has always been important as a way of understanding something. You know, it's all very well reading about it and listening to it or whatever, but actually, when we put things on their feet and looking at these old scripts and saying, okay, let's get a group of actors and musicians together, let's see if we can make it work, it really does open things up. So that was the thing I wanted to do with this, the new book, even though a lot of it was archival work and digging through yellowing bits of paper and everything. You know, that's still that understanding of how the studio works and the microphone works and all the rest can actually explain so much.
Thanks to Richard Hand there. And you might have noticed we spoke at length about one of the books Richard had wrote recently, and I never asked what the title was. So I had a wee look on Amazon there, and it's called Listen in Terror, British Horror Radio from the Advent of Broadcasting to the Digital Age. So yeah, we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Sounds brilliant.
Yeah, I've got a few vouchers actually left over from Christmas, so I think I'll get myself a copy of that.
So elsewhere this week, there's been some excellent discussion in the Facebook group. If you're on Facebook, get on there, asked a couple of questions, and it's always great to hear everyone's thoughts. Robert, I was asking about the old 48,000, 44, 100 debate and how people produce and things like that, and we were speaking about stereo and mono and pan and vocals as well recently. So yeah, loads of great insight on there, loads of very knowledgeable people.
Yeah, I was with a musician friend of mine, and he had a load of files up on the screen using Audacity. Funnily enough, he'd managed to get them from, I think he'd exported them from music games like, what do you call it, Guitar Hero and things like that. And he'd had all the different tracks laid out, like that make up a particular song, the drums, the vocals, blah, blah, blah. And they were all 48,000 as well. So that did make me think, oh, yeah, so 48, not 44, 100, so... it's interesting. What was the conclusion of the discussion? And is 48 better, but 44, 100 is less, takes up less space? Is that it?
Well, there's that, but you know, producing at 48, recording and producing at 48,000. I mean, obviously, it's a higher rate. It's better. But my question was, you know, is it worth producing in it when you're inevitably going to downsample and release at 44, 100? Because that's sort of your, you know, standard MP3. So I was just asking, you know, is there any point in doing that? But yeah, I think there is, you know, and I think everyone was in agreement that you should certainly look to have a real premium quality copy of your file. You know, keep a WAV file as your master file, mm-hmm. if you like, and you can downsample an MP3 for consumer release. But certainly keep those files, you know, keep a premium copy, because you never know, you could look to create a higher rate and maybe sell them, things like that. So it never hurts to keep that on your PC.
Makes sense. I mean, if people want to mix it down to MP3 or a lower rate or whatever and listen to it on crappy headphones or whatever because that's what they've got to hand, then that's fine. They'll do that and they'll miss out on the higher quality in that instance. But not everybody will. So we should probably strive to make it a higher quality for the few that are listening to it on their super duper headphones and whatnot.
Yeah, so aside from that, Robert, you were shocked to hear that I set up an Instagram for us, weren't you?
Yeah, I was at work when I got the message from you saying you've set it up, and I just replied with one word or something like, oh, hell. Because you've bowed to peer pressure, I think you'd put it.
Yeah, well, everyone's doing it. I was listening to Andy Brown up in St Andrews, lives local to us, his podcast, Triple Your Clients. You know, a great guy that I've met before, and I listen to him every week now. The Libsyn podcast as well, the feed, they're doing it. They're on Instagram, and I thought, well, why shouldn't we be? So
yeah,
we'll have to start taking selfies and stuff, you know.
Pictures of the booth, the rabbits running around.
Yeah, things like that.
It makes sense. We do occasionally put pictures up of us doing recordings and things. So, yeah, all right, why not? Let's embrace the digital age.
But the minute we put a picture of a
cup of coffee up. That's it.
Next to some vegetarian pasta.
We're closing the account after that.
I'm going to be wearing my brightest scarf and glasses with no glass in them.
So if you're on Instagram, Audio Drama Production, all one word, that's where you can hashtag find us if you're hashtag on there. I think that's how you speak when you're on there. So yeah, see you there, maybe. We've got a spam email of the week, Robert.
Can I read it out?
Yeah.
Yes. One sec. Okay. I deliberately haven't read this yet, so that was my reaction. Here we go. This one food ingredient is killing you dead.
Well, I don't know about you, Robert, but see these half-hearted murderers that kill people but not dead? You know, they just kind of half-kill them. I've no time for that. So for me, it's in for a penny, in for a pound. You know, if you're going to kill somebody, kill them dead.
All the way dead?
Yeah.
Is it silicone gel? Is that the one food ingredient that's killing us?
Cause I'm not sure. I should really open these emails.
It does come with warnings on the packet, like cigarettes. But people still smoke cigarettes, so maybe people are eating silicone gel.
Maybe.
This one food ingredient is killing you dead.
There you go.
Hmm.
But aside from that, that's about it for this week. Sorry, we were a bit brief. We were just recording a wee piece there for John Ballantyne at Campfire Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting. We spent the day doing that. So that took a bit of time. We're a bit rushed. And we thought instead of getting together on Skype tonight, we could just grab 10 minutes and record here.
Yeah.
With a bit better quality. Don't want to do it on Skype every week, but it is practical because our work hours don't really fit. You know, the work hours that don't work and the hours you do work, they don't fit together.
Yeah, that's it. And I've got the wee one as well, and we have to not literally juggle her, but juggle her to some extent.
When I go back to work in May, it's going to be a nightmare because I'll leave the house at 4:30 in the morning. And you'll finish at 10 at night?
I'll start work at 5 in the evening.
Yeah, I don't get home till 5. So I leave the house at 4:30, get home at 5, but you're going out the door at that point. We don't live together, by the way. You're going out the door at 5, so you'll be in at 10. I think we'll probably just have to record on a Sunday or something.
Yeah,
but I'll work some weekends, but only the mornings. I cut grass in the summer. If you want lawn advice, I'm your man.
Law and order. Lawn Order, that should be your podcast.
Should be my business.
Yeah, Lawn Order, special grass unit or something. We'll think about it. So yeah, I mean, 10:30 at night when I get home, you'll be long asleep.
Oh, I need my bed. And mind you, I honestly could take sleep or leave it. I don't sleep that much.
Well, I disagree there, I have to say. Sleep is most important to me. Probably because I don't get as much as I'd like. But we won't go into that. Anyway, it's been a good week in terms of production for us.
Yeah, we put a wee audio drama out this week as well. It was just some of the things that I'd been producing recently for uni and other things, and we experiment. So called it Not Doctor Who Fan Fiction because it wasn't Doctor Who fan fiction. So that's out there. Put a link to that in the show notes as well. Apart from that, have a good week, I suppose. Am I meant to give some advice here? Because I hadn't thought of any.
Email info@yapaudio.co.uk with any thoughts or comments or insults or whatever else. Get us on the website, get us on the Facebook group.
Yeah, all of those things. Do them all. Don't just do one of them.
Yeah, and remember, an owl in a sack troubles no man.
Well, right, next week, later, take care and all those things. Goodbye.
Cheerio.